Thanks for everyone. Shit. Hold on. My other.
I think we just found our introductory soundbite.
You, Bill. All right, here we go.
That one is better. That's better.
Thank you, everyone.
All right.
You are listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the CRM Archaeology Podcast, episode 84 for May 11th, 2016. I'm your host, Chris Webster. On May 14th, a website called Professional Certifications for Scientists will launch. We talked to the PCS crew and asked them all about this new tool for archaeologists and others to use. Listeners to this podcast are the first to hear about it. So, go invest in yourself, because the CRM Archaeology Podcast starts right now. Welcome to the show, everyone. Joining me today is Sonia in Utah.
Hello.
Bill in Arizona.
Buenos dias.
And Doug in Scotland.
Hey.
And Bill, what vehicle are you in today? Are you at home?
I'm recording in my wonderful closet. It's my office. It used to be where people hung coats and like rain boots, but now it's where we record podcasts.
Nice, nice. Bill's our very own Harry Potter. So, all right.
Harry might be more like it, but not Potter.
Not Potter. Nice. All right. So we're recording this currently on May 1st. However, this episode comes out on May 11th or May 10th, one of those two. I've got to break in for a quick editing note here. So we decided after recording the show that we'd push the launch of the website to May 14th, as I said in the introduction. We also decided to launch with 10 videos initially instead of 20. It just made more sense from an organizational standpoint. Also, Deanna has decided to leave PCS so she can focus more closely on an upcoming academic challenge. She was, however, an integral part in developing everything we are and everything we have to say. Michael Ashley of the Center for Digital Archaeology and Codify has replaced Deanna as our fifth founding member. Also, keep in mind that everything we say is in constant flux and evolution. We have some long-term goals, but the path to those goals is by no means set in stone, and we welcome collaboration and constructive criticism. Okay, I think the stage is set. Back to the show. So as you're hearing this, a few days before, on May 7th, a new website was launched and a new service called PCS, or Professional Certifications for Scientists. And I'm a part of that, and we've got four of the other founding members that are part of that. There's five of us total. They're all on the show right now, and we're going to talk about PCS and hopefully answer any questions that have been coming out in social media, likely over the past 3 or 4 days, and we've been pushing this really hard. Again, we delayed the launch. But first, I just want to go around and have the PCS crew say hi, and so you can hear their voice and associate that with their name. So when they're speaking later, you know who that is. So let's just go around the virtual table, and everyone just say hi and give your full name, and then we'll go on from there. So we'll start with Josh.
Hello, I'm Joshua Dunn.
Jesse.
Hi, I'm Jesse Schellmeyer.
And Andrew.
Hi, I'm Andrew Erickson.
And Deanna.
Hi, I'm Deanna Dichkovsky.
All right. And we'll have the spelling of Deanna's name in the show notes and on the website. No. So, all right. So what is PCS? We're not going to get into the background of PCS because you can only find that out if you have a beer with one of us on where the letters PCS come from. So that's a very private thing. So PCS debuted, like I said, on May 7th as a website. We launched with videos, instructional videos, and a job posting board with additional resources available on the website. So what is PCS? What are we doing with this thing? We're going to do a lot of talking right now, and we'll let the CRM podcast crew kind of listen to this and then chime in with questions on us and kind of grill us on what this is, because like I said, we're recording this early, so they haven't seen much of this either. So as we start to talk about this, they can generate questions and then they can, we can answer them. So let's start out real quick talking about just what PCS is. Maybe one of the other guys can do that, since I'm the host of this podcast and I'm feeling a little bit, conflict of interest. I don't know. So, so how about Jesse? Jesse, why don't you just let us know what you think?
Oh boy.
What PCS? I know, and try to do it in 7 seconds or less. No, I'm just kidding. So tell us in your own words what PCS is initially, and then we'll get to where we're going.
Yeah, sure. So PCS right now, what it officially stands for is Professional Certifications for Scientists. And it's identifying a larger problem, which we all kind of know, which is that we're not taught the practical skills we need to know that are actually required for the job in the field. And there is a lack of understanding of the best practices. And no one really provides a way to basically show that people have that understanding. So we've come up with a solution for that. And we're working towards a lot more solutions for that very problem. But yeah, that's basically it in a nutshell, I guess.
Okay. And Andrew, why don't you tell us a little about the job posting board that we're debuting along with this?
Sure. One of the things that I think most archaeologists have noticed is that it's hard to find good jobs and good information about the jobs that are out there. So we've come up with a solution based off of what are the things that an archaeologist needs to know when they're looking for a job, you know, in terms of pay, location, duration of the project, those sorts of things that companies aren't necessarily used to posting in a typical job posting, but are very, very relevant to our field. So we've put together a job board that is focused on answering those specific questions, so it'll allow companies to get top talent right away and for archaeologists to find projects that perfectly meet their need at any given time.
Yeah, so here's a quick question for you guys on the job board. Are you guys going to set sort of any sort of standards in terms of pay and benefits that you'll allow people to post on? So in a sense, are you going to keep people from posting, you know, jobs that's at minimum wage if it doesn't meet, you know, a certain wage limit or a benefits limit, anything like that?
Well, kind of our idea there, Doug, and that's a great question, is that we think that some of those jobs will weed themselves out as archaeologists have all the information available to them. And so what we've done is we've made it a requirement that companies post information regarding salary, per diem, how pay is given, when it's given, all of that, so that archaeologists can look and say, well, you know, and see the full deal, you know, that they're getting into. And we think that with all of that information, kind of the bad ones are going to fall by the wayside.
Yeah, and I'll expand on that a little bit, Doug. What we're doing is almost every single field on our job post, all the important ones, are required. And not only are they required, but we're moderating the job posts. So if we look at it and somebody fills in an answer that's not really an answer, we'll quickly send them a message and say, hey, you need to revise this, and then we'll put it up on the job posting board. You know, we'll respond within 24 hours to all the job posts because we know that they're time sensitive, but and we'll try to get it dialed in perfectly as possible. So to answer your question, like Andrew said, no, we're not eliminating the ones that are, say, minimum wage or just straight up crappy jobs in our minds, but we are requiring them to put all that information in and not be vague. So they can't just put up, hey, we've got a job, it doesn't pay very well, see who responds. They have to put up the information, otherwise they're not going to use our service. So, you know, minimum wage is accepted. It just might not get any calls. They might though. I mean, people need work. You know what I mean? I mean, so if it's local and you can drive down the street and go work for it, maybe minimum wage works out for you right now. I don't know. Anyway, yeah, that's where we're going with the job posting board.
So a follow-on question, if you guys don't mind. So obviously that sounds really amazing for, you know, people looking for jobs. How are you guys going to get people who are looking to post jobs? Because, you know, there's shovel bums and there's archaeology field work already. And, you know, there's a couple occasional small things and Facebook groups and all that stuff where people post. How are you going to attract the job posters?
Well, I can answer that. We've put together a list of all of the active CRM companies in the United States, and we've got a flyer that we're sending out likely soon, and we're going to send that out and to promote the job posting service. So one of the things, because this is it's moderated. You know, we are putting some time and effort into this. So the job posting is going to cost $50, if you're hearing this in the present time, which is cheaper than shovel bums. It's obviously more expensive than ARC fieldwork because they're free, ARC fieldwork is also not moderated, which is, that's the biggest problem we're experiencing, is they're not moderated. So we're counting on our social networks and social media to put some of this information out there and have people start saying to their employers, hey, why aren't you posting on PCS? Because, you know, we trust their job posts and things like that. We know it'll go slow in the beginning, but it'll be an ongoing process, and it's not a massive revenue stream for us anyway. We just want to have another option out there. Jesse, do you have more to add to that?
Basically, the idea too here is that, like, since our job posting board is a little more thorough and it's asking different questions than a normal one, you know, and our outline, the way it's set up and everything, the format will basically help sell itself in many ways, because a lot of the issues that people have, even with posting jobs, is that it's not very clear, it's not very concise, and it doesn't get to a targeted audience. So that's kind of what we're trying to provide.
And I think another good point to keep in mind is kind of the interface between the jobs and the education, is when the people who are going to PCS are going there to become better scientists, to become better archaeologists. And so companies, if they are looking at that very pool of people to draw from when they're hiring employees, they're going to get much better employees. So there's more of an advantage than just a relatively cheap job posting. You know, they're going to have a pool of very, very good archaeologists that they're going to be drawing from.
Yeah, and you know, I'm just thinking of this right now, so I'll have to talk to the rest of the PCS crew, but one of the reasons we wanted to do this, you know, we have certain, you know, like I said, certain things on the job posting that they have to answer. But possibly in the future, and when we talk about certification later on, maybe we could even include something in the job post that says, you know, they're looking for people with these PCS credentials, like PCS, you know, blah, 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 blah. And they can tick that off. And then people know, oh, I've got to have this certification. Just like they say you have to have RPA, or they say you have to have a field school, you also have to have this, this, and this if you want to apply to the job. So it's just a thought, and it's something we can modify as we go along. That makes sense. We're hoping to get good feedback on this so people can see it and say, hey, that doesn't make any sense, or maybe you guys can change this, or, you know, we're totally willing to listen to feedback. This isn't a set in stone sort of thing. That being said, the five of us have worked in this field for 10 years apiece, so 50 years combined experience looking for jobs all over the country. We know what we look for in a job post. We know what we like to see in a job post, and, you know, we want to have, we just want to provide a good experience for everybody on both sides of the coin.
Yeah. So with your guys' sort of training side, is something future to be, I guess, more exclusive job postings, in a sense that after you've certified a bunch of people as, you know, having these skills, will it be possible for maybe companies to post there and only PCS qualified people will be able to see those posts or apply, to sort of cut down? I mean, now it's not so bad, but, you know, height of the recession, you were getting 200, 300 resumes for every position. Mm-hmm. Are you guys going to have some sort of filtering thing in the future?
Well, that's always a possibility. It just depends on, you know, the adoption of PCS as a certification program and how that goes. Like I said, it's all totally malleable, and we can change it, and we can do whatever makes sense. But I think that's a fantastic idea personally, and it ties into one of the long term goals I've been thinking about that we haven't actually really fleshed out for PCS, because it might actually be a different company. But, you know, long term, super long term goal of mine has always been, for the last 3 or 4 years, I've been thinking about this since I was an aviation electronics technician, and I was working in an aviation temp agency, basically, that only had as temps, you know, highly qualified people in electronics and aviation electronics industry, and they would send us out to different places. Well, I was like, why can't we have that for archaeology? Because as a temp for that company, I had benefits, I had a salary, and the company I went and worked for on a daily basis, because it would change, they would, and it was project to project, basically, they would, you know, they wouldn't have to be responsible for my pay or anything like that, or any of the HR stuff. So the temp agency actually handled that. So why not have something similar for archaeologists, where, you know, we have the PCS archaeologist, and somebody just comes along, and rather than posting a job, they just post a request, and they say, hey, I need five people with these certifications for this amount of time. We see who we have in our database that's available, and we send them to them on a subcontract kind of basis. So
yeah, this is like a larger conversation. We, you know, it's been going on for a while. Yeah. But I mean, we were talking about it in the truck like a year ago when we were all working together. And, you know, basically we all know at this point in time that there's a level of standards, and this is true across the board in every scientific field. There are standards of common practice that we do on the job that we do not learn in school at all. And when you get out into the field, it's like you have no way of showing an employer that you have those skills, nor learning those skills, except for on the field right now. And this is providing an alternative to that, so that basically you can say to not only the workforce, like, hey, I have these skills, but also the workforce can verify that. And therefore, in the end, hopefully, employment will also reflect that pay in the pay scale when people get hired. So Right. That's kind of what we're going for.
Yeah. And one other thing too, Doug's mentioning in the background, he said kind of like LinkedIn, except it doesn't suck. There is a concept for another company I've been thinking about tied to that job company, that like the subcontracting company. And that has to do with Codify, which I've mentioned on here before, and I mentioned in the Archaeotech podcast. So, you know, Codify is a whole suite of program. It's a whole end-to-end application that we're developing that is going to be from, you know, for project management and everything in the field. And the thing is, it's user-based. So you'll have a user subscription, you'll have a user ID. So why not have a third company that has a global user ID? So that person can type in, they can sign in, they can see from Codify all the projects they've worked on, the places they've worked, all that kind of information. You know, obviously classified or proprietary information is redacted from that. So you just see like the report title of the project and maybe the state or county that it's in, something like that, prehistoric, historic, whatever metrics we want to create. But then also all of your PCS certifications. And then you can have a public face of that profile that you can hand to an employer and say, this is what I've done, almost like your CV, just like LinkedIn does, except more focused towards, you know, what we're talking about. So, but anyway, these are all some of our long-term goals, which I wanted to talk about in the third segment of the podcast. So in the last few minutes of this first segment, let's bring this back to PCS. And Josh, maybe you can tell us why this is professional certifications for scientists, not just archaeologists.
Yes. So the reason why we're called professional certifications for scientists is obviously we're coming out to the world here as archaeologists, but that is by far the only our first step in many. We want to start by reaching out to other field scientists, such as wetland biologists, geologists, paleontologists, a lot of the other fieldologists, if you will. Again, we're going with what we know, and all of us here have an archaeological background, but a lot of us also have geologic backgrounds, have paleontological backgrounds, some of us have dabbled in biology and some of the environmental inspectors, things of that nature. And what we want to be able to do is increase the viability of those fields as well. Archaeology is, again, going to be our starting platform, but by no means is going to be where we end. We'd like to figure out all of our, you know, kind of smooth out the edges here in archaeology, and then expand it to other scientists, which would mean that we'll be bringing on teams from all of those disciplines and expanding into those areas. We see this happening within the next couple of years. We'd like to start bringing on a few different fields and expand into their areas. We know that archaeology is not the only scientific field that has issues with job postings or lack of field-based skills and knowledge, or a lack of any metric standard to be able to, understand those as far as saying, hey, I can do this, that, and the other thing, and saying, well, we can just take your word for it. Well, PCS and things like it are going to be able to say, oh, okay, I don't just have to take your word for it. I can see that you do know how to do this through certification programs and things of that nature. So, yeah, we are that's why we're not any kind of archaeological oriented thing or in the beginning. We are definitely going to expand, we hope, in as early as a year, but it might be, you know, maybe a year and a half to 2 years, but definitely look for us expanding into several other fields.
Okay. Well, we are just about at the end of this segment, and we're going to get into exactly what certification means since we've just broken the ice on that one, and it's going to be a long conversation. So we'll come back on the other side of the break and talk about certification, and then everybody can get out their pitchforks and show up at our front doors.
Profiles in CRM, a weekly podcast, asks CRM professionals 8 simple questions. The first questions establish education, location, and experience. The last questions are a reflection of that experience, and the answers will surprise you. Check out the show on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and at www.archaeologypodcastnetwork.com/profiles. On that page, you can also request to be interviewed for the show. It only takes 20 minutes, and you don't need any special equipment. Let's get back to the show.
All right, we're back, and we're going to talk about really the big topic of the day and the actual primary purpose of PCS, professional certifications for scientists, and what that actually means in our minds. First off, when you guys are looking at the website, which is, and this will be in the show notes as well, so you can click over there and click right in probably from your smartphone, but it's www.pcscourses.com, and that's where all our videos are. And right now, we have, as you're listening to this, we have approximately 20 videos up there. I'm saying that hopefully because I've got one that I'm still working on that's really being a pain in my ass. But so at least 19 videos up there, and they're intended to be a random selection of topics. There's really no coherence to them right now. They're just things that we've put together as almost a demonstration to show that what we're doing and what we're capable of. These were shot with a 1080p slightly, it's not a digital SLR, but a decent camera with a decent microphone and some decent lighting and things like that. And we've tried to put these things together. So we're putting these things in, and we're going to be getting better equipment as we go along as well. So as we launch this thing out and then reshooting all the videos eventually multiple times as we update them. So, but anyway, that's what's on the website right now, in addition to some resources we have up there, in addition to some to the job posting board. So, and right now, you can just go up and watch the videos. There's no tests, there's no anything. It's all very free, and it's all ready to go. So, but talking about certification, Deanna, why don't you give us a little idea about what we've discussed that certification means and what our sort of time frame is for this thing?
As Chris said before, what we have up now are some educational videos, and that's what we've produced thus far. And we're trying to develop and intend to develop a certification program to use those educational videos to better educate people. And then we intend to test them on the material that they've viewed. So we hope within maybe the next year or so, we'll be able to have something up. And we really want this to be a collaborative process as well. And we really want feedback, and we want everybody to tell us what they think they need and how to give us comments on how well they think we've done with the topics we've covered thus far. Mm-hmm. So,
we're trying to make it so it's an expanded topic, but also not fall into complete chaos and compromise what are the best ideas, make sure that they're actually the best ideas for what would reflect certification to be able to do our jobs at all the different levels of our jobs, and make sure that it's reasonable so that it's not something that is crushing or holding people back, not another hoop to jump through or glass ceiling, that basically holds people back from getting a better job or showing or demonstrating that they actually have these skills that need to be reflected time and time again. And what we're hoping is that this will be run by both people at the top and the bottom, so that it becomes something that, more fully reflects our field. And it isn't something that, basically people are dictating from the top or trying to get past at the bottom, and companies can have a way to verify. Yes, in fact, they actually do know the things that we're asking them to know, and company and the employers can be like, yes, I actually, in fact, do know what you're asking me to know. So that's kind of our goal in the end here.
Yeah. Exactly. And along with that, this is going to come with a cost, because it's not free to put this stuff together. But the cost is going to be minimal. And one of the reasons for that is because we know that, we know that archaeologists don't make any money, and this is what we're building. This is what we're putting this out to, initially, but we want people to, as I said in a post on Archaeo Field Techs, invest in themselves and invest in their own futures and their own careers. So you know, it's going to take some work to get through our certification levels. And maybe I can have Deanna talk about that in just a second here. But it's going to take some work to do that because our videos are intended to be 5 to 10 minutes long. And, you know, we're looking at, you know, something around 40, 50 videos per level. And we'll say what that means in a second. To gain certification. So, and also, you know, a lot of this stuff might only be, again, we need to work a lot of this stuff out, but some of this stuff might only be available for like a field season that you're certified for. So you come back the next year and you do it again, a really short sort of thing and a really cheap thing that you can do year after year to maintain your knowledge level. So, you know, that's why these things are short.
And to add to that, you know, the idea here is that we're forming as a nonprofit so that we can keep those costs minimal and not have to worry on the field to pay for itself, essentially. We can bring this to a wider audience, which is important, too, because all of the videos and all of the resources we're making will always be free so that people can learn the information and have access to this in a public knowledge kind of sense so that it's not limited to just, you know, like, oh, well, I'm getting a certification for archaeology. It'll be more expanded than that.
Yeah, we're currently gaining our nonprofit status actually right now. So, you know, our whole intent is to be a beneficial educational resource for archaeologists. Now, like I said, you know, like Jesse said, their videos are going to be free. There'll be a resource where they are free. You can just go watch the videos anytime you want. But there will be the paid services certification where at the end of the video, there's a short test that you have to take, you know, 10, 15 questions just to make sure that you didn't just hit play and then walk away. And it just tests your knowledge on the video that you just watched. So so that's that. And Deanna, why don't you give them a quick idea on the levels that we're discussing having?
Sure. So at this point, we're envisioning four levels. The first is the field tech level. The second, a crew chief. Third, field director, project manager, I think we're putting in the third level. And then the fourth would be a principal investigator. And so what we're hoping to do is have groups of videos that we can put together that are tailored for each of those individual levels. And that's probably going to be something that's develops through time and hopefully we'll take your input and be able to incorporate that into how we develop the curriculum.
And yeah, so we're also talking about ideas of how we include experience into that formula and also, like, you know, what means certification and what means membership. It's really still in the brainstorming phase, and that's why we're talking about expanding into a larger group of people to help us also brainstorm a bit. But yeah,
I think too it's important to note that the whole purpose of this is for the scientist, that an archaeologist, for example, he knows that he can accurately describe a can, or if he's unable to do that, that he can't. And this is going to be a resource where he can learn how to do that if he doesn't yet know, and if he does know, he can prove that he knows. And that will make him more marketable to good employers. And in the end, that will make the science that comes out of what we do better.
Yeah, and there's a bit of a conversation going on in the background here. I want to touch on a bit about, you know, because everybody's going to talk about university professors and, well, isn't this why I get my graduate degree? And it's part of the reason you get your graduate degree, but it's not a full complete picture because this is a profession and it's not so much the university level isn't so much geared towards the profession of CRM. It's, and this is true with all sciences. You know, I had a great conversation with a microbiologist about how, you know, universities are sort of like the, you know, trying to put the square peg in the round hole again, you know, the idea that they don't actually meet the demand of the market. And you get a lot of people who get, you know, their PhDs in microbiology and they don't even know what micropipetting is. And it's like, that's a common feature within that field. So, you know.
Yeah, I got to say real quick, universities, especially when it comes to the anthropology department, they are actually, so first of all, universities, especially, you know, the University of Arizona and all the ones that are in red states where money seems to be scarce for the people, they're all trying to find ways that they can increase enrollment, right? Because the state is cutting back their budget. So the way that they're doing that is to try and get as many students as they possibly can. And one of the ways that they're trying to get students is by creating courses that actually do give some kind of real world experience or connect people to the job market after they graduate, right? So in anthropology, we've been noticing that it's more and more difficult to recruit students at the undergrad level because there's a never-ending barrage of worst fields, you know, worst things to study in college articles that come out, and they always put, you know, social work and anthropology and anything that actually makes life good on that list, right? And their number one thing is they're saying you can't make any money doing that. So this has really impacted the undergrad level because it's difficult to convince an 18-year-old kid that thinks that they're going to be pulling down, you know, $70,000 with their BA within 5 years of graduation. It's hard to convince that kid to go into anthropology, even though they really love that field, right? Mm-hmm. So there is actually, and it's, you know, moving, I think, at a titanic speed, a reverse course where more universities are realizing, you know what, if we don't get students in here, we're not going to actually have a department. And the only way to get students is to show them that you can actually make money and that this is a viable field. You know, you can actually survive. So there is a lot more conversation in universities that you wouldn't otherwise think would be thinking this way and teaching more about cultural resource management, right? And so in the background, we've noted how it's difficult for professors to teach cultural resources because so many of them have experience in completely other realms. They're not really actually connected to the industry, right? It's difficult for those folks to do that, but also there aren't really a lot of resources out there for teaching this kind of stuff. We've all read Tom King's books like 4 times, and that's basically all there is. We've all read Newman and Sanford, you know, multiple times, and that's kind of the end. And so at this point, there's, you know, several other books that are good out there, but there's not really anything like that. If you compare stuff like business school or medical school, where there's more involvement from the industry, but also more opportunities for students to interact with actual doctors or, you know, people that have been surgeons, people who used to work, you know, in startups or tech companies, you know, these guys are actually coming to universities and giving talks and things like that. The people who are coming to the university and talking in anthropology are folks that have done awesome archaeology somewhere in the world that's really attractive, but not cultural resource management. So it's not actually relative to getting people jobs. So this has a potential to create the curriculum tools that could be incorporated into universities. So it's probably not a good idea to just write off universities as, you know, off in left field. But I think that if you design things in a manner that schools can use, I mean, they don't seem to have any problem telling students to buy a $180 physical anthropology book that they'll use for 3 months. What's their objection to using or telling their students to buy a $15 course or whatever, you know, from you guys? You designing things with universities in mind might actually be one of the best things because there's way more students in archaeology than there are actual archaeologists.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're not writing off the universities here. We're not writing off the universities here. One of the things is that we kind of see this like a tool, sort of like your tape measure eventually, that you're going to be able to watch like a 10-minute video and refresh yourself on how to, you know, record a car chassis or something when you're out in the field. And you might not know that. You might have learned it in school, you know, or even like tin cans. You might have learned some of the stuff from tin cans, but you forgot it, you know, and you need to know at that moment. And it's like, all right, so watch a video for 5 minutes and boom, you know it, you know, and you can get back to recording the site or whatever.
And I think another point I want to piggyback on is we're talking about the cost, and we've mentioned a few times the cost of certifications. This is something that we haven't fully fleshed out or developed yet, nor is it necessarily something that we've figured out who would be paying that cost. And I think you made a great point when you said, you know, why would a university not, you know, require this? Or maybe an employer might see a huge advantage to having all of their employees be certified, and they would foot that cost. So I want to make sure that we're not scaring folks away, you know, saying that there's going to be a paid certification thing coming down the pike, but rather there's going to be this thing that's going to really help good archaeologists and good scientists prove that they have those skills. It'll help science in general, making sure that good people are doing good work.
Yeah, and to get back to the bigger thing here is, I mean, this is across the board of multiple different fields. You know, I've done some wetland biology, I've done some paleo monitoring, and, you know, I've worked in a couple other fields in the sciences, and it all comes back to the same thing. There's no way for employers to verify that you actually know some of the basic things that you need to know when you enter these fields. And, you know, we hope when people come out with a graduate degree or something else that, like, oh yeah, they have a good understanding. Oftentimes it kind of misses the mark, you know, and then you're out there training somebody how to identify flakes and you're like, man, you know, if only there were a better way, you know. So that's kind of what we're trying to fill the gap of.
I want to jump in real quick on what Jesse was saying about that is that we also, we're trying to create, you know, kind of like a help and create rather a good standard that's out there, you know, like where you might have someone who's graduated from one place or another and they all come in saying they know how to do, you know, oh, we all know how to excavate at this level. And we all have our own understandings of what that means. But when they come in and they start practicing, they're like, oh, well, this is how I was taught how to do it. Oh, well, this is how I was taught how to do it. And it doesn't, it may not all be the same. There might be small variations, but we want to make sure that the science is done correctly. And we want to make sure that it's done, you know, so when people look at it, they're like, oh, well, it was done in 15 different ways. How are you able to prove your results? One of the things that we'll be able to help with this through the certifications is creating that good standard, is creating, you know, a best practices, if you will. Of course, that's going to, you know, augment over time as we take in a lot of, you know, experience and feedback from people. But that's one of the other benefits that we're hoping to create within the field itself is these best practice standards as well.
Yeah, let me elaborate on that just a little bit, because we're not inferring or implying that there is a quote unquote right way to do anything. But the reason I haven't started this, I had this idea years ago. And in fact, I even approached a publishing company about doing something along these lines. And my book is kind of based along these lines about these small things and learning these things that you didn't learn in college. And one of the reasons why I figured the time was right was not only the conversations we were having on Facebook about this kind of stuff and how people seem frustrated by the lack of something like this, but also because I was working with a very highly educated, highly experienced crew of people, the people on this podcast right now. And I was like, this is the time. Let's put this together, because while there is no quote unquote right way to do it, you know, our method for creating these courses that you see is one of us will generally write it. They'll write the outline, then we'll fill in all the text. And then the five of us come together and we do what we call a table read on it. And Andrew, our on-screen person, will generally read through it. And then we'll go through and we'll say, wait, that doesn't make sense. We need to add this. We need to change this. That doesn't make any sense. Because we've all worked all over the country and we feel like we're taking a really high quality average of what quote unquote right is. You know what I mean? So it's not there is one right way, but we're taking an average on the right way. So
yeah, this is best common practices. So the idea is that, like, this is what we're doing now. And I totally see it as this comes out, I hope that our methods get even better and better, because some of the stuff that we do in the field, I hope it gets critiqued as a general practice. And eventually in 20 years, what we do now is not going to be what we do in the future, hopefully. But, you know, and the idea is that by getting this out there, saying that, hey, so when people get a job and when they're looking for a job, they, like, for example, if you come out west and you're walking back east, you know, you don't know what tin cans are, because to be honest, there are no tin cans. They're gone. You know, they decay in the ground. So mm-hmm. by the time you get out here and you're like, wow, this is really important. I need to know all of, like, what a hole in top can is, you know, you didn't have that background from home or whatever. So.
Exactly. We're nearly at the end of this segment. When we come back, we're going to talk about some stuff about course design and a little bit more about our certification and our existing goals. But one of the things I wanted to mention real quick, because I've already mentioned it before, was about Codify. And I think one of you guys mentioned, you know, the idea is for someone to be able to do quick refreshers. That's why these things are short. These videos are short. But one of the things I've been talking to Codify about, and this isn't set in stone, is that you'll be able to using this application while you're actually recording in the field, and you say, oh, I've got a tin can here, and I don't remember what the seams are on a tin can. So there'll be a button in Codify where you can just bring up a 45-second PCS video that really quickly runs through what all the different seams are that you can find on a tin can or something like that. Yeah, you know, just a really fast, not a lot of intro, outro, not a lot of BS, just really fast. Here, this is what it is, built right into the application. So again, that's in development. It's it might not even come out this year. I'm not sure, but it's one of our long-term goals that we're looking towards, and we can put that into a lot of other stuff. So right now, though, we're going to take another short break, and we'll come back on the other side and wrap this up.
Hi, everyone. This is Christopher Doerr with Heritage Business International, and here is this week's Heritage Business Tip from the Archive. This week, we look at the true cost of curation. Most museums and repositories have the burden of curation in perpetuity, and that's a long time. How much to charge to curate a box of materials? Total all the costs of curation for last year. Divide that by the number of boxes you can store. This is how much you need per box in the first year, and this will go up each year due to inflation. Typically, you can draw 3% of a long-term conservative investment and still cover the inflation costs. So, if you need $150 per box in year one, you would need to invest $5,000 to cover your annual costs. This is the real cost of curating a box of materials in perpetuity and is what repositories need to be charging. To receive our most up-to-date Heritage Business Tips, you can subscribe to our free weekly email at heritagebusiness.org. Until next time, this is Christopher Doerr.
All right, we're back, and Doug's got a question based on something that's going over in the UK that's a little bit similar to what we're doing. Go ahead, Doug.
Yeah, so over here in the UK, we have skills passports, which are essentially record-keeping booklets that people can take. They can go to, you know, field schools, or when they're working on the job on CRM, or what we call over here commercial archaeology, they can then have like their supervisor sign off. And it'll say something like, you know, able to set up a one-by-one square. Basic skill level, yes, or an expert in, you know, laying out one by ones and so forth like that. So, and there's a couple of different skills passports. The main one is run by Badger and David Connolly, and that's become more of the standard, but there's different variations of it. And that's sort of become hot in the last couple of years as a way for people to validate their skills. And so they can go to an employer and say, yeah, I have this. It's been signed off by, you know, different supervisors who can attest to I have these sort of skills. And when you guys are talking about certification, are you thinking about doing something along those lines? Or are you thinking something like online tests? Or are people going to go to like a center somewhere in each state and have, you know, a live demonstration to prove that they have their skills? How are you guys planning on doing your certification?
So all this is, yeah, well, actually what we thought of, and this is why it's an annual sort of thing, you know, for these certifications. And this is why they're super short and they're intended for you to take basically year after year, but not necessarily the same courses year after year. So what we're looking at is, you know, you'll be able to watch the video. And at the end of the video, if you're logged in and watching this on our PCS website, if you're watching it on YouTube or something, you just watch the video and do what you want to do. But if you want certification, you watch it on our website. At the end, it'll be a short multiple choice test, and you have to get 100% on it. So you can take it as many times as you want to get that 100%. It's just meant to test your knowledge and to make sure you actually watch the video, like I mentioned in the first segment, I think. And then, you know, after you do that, you'll be quote unquote certified for that particular course, unless you're taking a series of courses or what we're calling the level certification, like Deanna was talking about earlier. So, and again, we're fleshing all this out, so none of this is set in stone, but my kind of rough idea that I've talked to the other guys about for level, let's just say level one certification, you know, for archaeologists, that would be a field technician. Okay. So level one certification in my mind would have something like, let's just for a round number, we'll say 50 courses, and then, you know, 35 or 40 of them are your base level one core curriculum that you would take no matter where you're at in the country. You know, that includes regulation type stuff, artifact identification, you know, a lot of the shovel bomb type things. And then you can have maybe a regional module in that. So if you want to take the Southwest module or the Great Basin module or the Southeast module, however we decide to break that up. And then maybe some electives on top of that. So if you want to take a course on the Trimble or a course on a Total Station or, you know, some other thing you're just interested in, you can add that on top of it. And then you get your quote unquote level one certification. So like the skills passport is based on, real quick, Jesse, the skills passport is based on actually doing things and getting those signed off for supervisors. And so that's like an after the fact sort of thing. You get your, you do your skills, you get your passport signed off. This is kind of going a little bit backwards with that. And it's like, you take these tests and then you're quote unquote certified just because you watch the test and then you watch the video and then you go in and you can apply that information. So Jesse.
Yeah. And on a bigger thing, this is still in the brainstorming process, but you know, Absolutely. We're working collaboratively with hopefully Badger too, because David's quite aware of us and everything else. But so we're trying to make sure that this is more inclusive. And I do see, I mean, we all have different ideas, and I do see that, you know, there's going to be an experience element that comes into play here, you know, because that's important, of course. And like also all the other factors, we're trying to invent new ways of doing this to make sure that it reflects best common practices and that you can demonstrate to your employer that, yeah, mm-hmm. in fact, I do know what I'm doing. So whatever that, by whatever means that is, if that's just videos or if that's a lot more, then we're going to make it a lot more.
Yeah. And let me mention Badger just real quick, because a few weeks ago for us, so I guess about mid-April timeframe, there was a lot of chatter about job posts and things like that on Archaeo Field Tech's group on Facebook. And David jumped in, David Connolly of Badger, he jumped in and was like, hey, this is how we do it over in the UK with Badger. This is how we do job postings. Perhaps Badger should do some sort of North American version of Badger. And I won't tell you what the acronym they came up with that was. But anyway, so they said, maybe we should do that. Well, I immediately contacted him and then had a long Skype call with David, and you know, the skills passports, the videos they want to do, all their resources on their website. We talked about what we want to do. We talked about what he's doing, and we both mutually agreed to rip off from each other. So, you know, we want these to be resources that aren't in competition. You know, PCS has no intention of going across the pond right now and doing videos there, which isn't to say we wouldn't partner with Badger at some point in the future and do something collaboratively, you know, that we can put together. But, you know, or maybe even join forces way off in the future. Who knows? You know, we don't want to have too much of a fracturing on this space. But anyway, we are in communication with them and we're learning from each other. And, you know, David's been doing this for a long time and he's got a really tried and true method over there that people respect and appreciate. So we're definitely learning from him, and he's going to be taking some stuff from us as well. And, you know, we've got some really good collaboration going on there. So Doug, I don't know if that answered all your questions or not, but that's about what we're looking at.
It did.
So shifting gears just a little bit, I want to talk real quick, because undoubtedly some people are going to ask us, and I've already alluded to this, but some people are going to ask us what makes us so qualified to make these videos. You know, what makes us qualified to do any of this? And I've mentioned, you know, we've all got a ton of experience all over the country, so we're bringing that together. But that being said, we're not doing any videos right now or ever that we're not confident that we know the material. We're not confident that we're experienced enough to create these videos or find the resources to create these videos. So as we move on and as, you know, funding comes in from various sources, we will be working on our regional certifications and some more specific things, like especially when you branch out of archaeology. But none of us know anything, you know, I mean, not enough from a professional standpoint to discuss things outside of archaeology and create videos. So we'll be looking for subject matter and regional experts to help us fill in the gaps on these things. And, you know, we're going to wait until we can actually pay them for this information, you know, like similar to the way encyclopedias pay for articles. We'll say, hey, can you put together an outline for this video? And then we'll do all the work to shoot the video and do all that stuff. But we will have subject matter and regional experts create these topics that we simply don't know enough about to create them. Now, we'll probably still table read through these things and add and move things around as we see fit. But, you know, all this stuff will be looked at and at least vetted by people who actually know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Oh, hell. Who's qualified for any of this? All of us, because no one else is doing it. You know what I'm saying? After us, that'll be the question of, are you qualified? But, you know, for you guys, you're the first ones there since there's no qualification. Yeah, you guys are qualified. Yes.
Well, and the idea too is that, like, again, because they're, again, like Chris said in the beginning, we have half a century of experience. We've worked in every major region of the United States. Collectively, we've worked for 1/5 of all the CRM companies that are out there. We understand a good level of it. And when we vest it through all 5 of us, we are getting a consistent product that's well-researched and put forward, you know, with resources attached to it so everybody can see exactly where we're getting our information. And all that's coming to a head so that, you know, we have something succinct, well done, that people will understand, and it won't be, you know, oh, well, I heard X, Y, and Z. It's like, no, this is what the facts are. So, yeah.
And I think it's important to just reiterate that we are never claiming to be the be all and end all, but rather this is just going to be a one-stop shop for best common practices. And as we move forward, it's going to be a collaborative project. We're going to be getting input from people throughout the archaeology community, throughout the scientific community. But for now, this is just best common practices.
Yeah. And, you know, I got to say, and what the biggest point of all of this is, it's like, you know, this is to teach people the skills they need, from whether or not that's like learning how to schedule RFPs so that you're not running from crisis to crisis from projects, or if that's identifying a flake. A resource in general that will teach people anything on that is so necessary right now, and it needs to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, to echo those guys, like they said, we're not experts in this. We just saw a hole that needed to be filled in this space, and we decided to just fill it, you know what I mean? To make it happen. And, you know, we're not, like we said before, we're not a for-profit company. You know, we don't ever intend to retire off of this, but, you know, we just want to have a good resource out there that everybody can use and that is beneficial. And the minute it stops being beneficial, we need to sit down and seriously rethink what we're doing. And that's why, you know, we will listen to input from everybody out there that's actually using these things and that can say, you know, I think we should have this, or what you guys said in that video was completely off base. Here's the reference for that. We'll reshoot that video. You know, we'll make that better. That's our entire goal. So, you know, we want to make this something that, like I said before, is actually beneficial. And anything we can put into PCS, we'll do based on user and listener or watcher feedback. So,
yeah, and in the end, you know, it comes down to doing the due diligence to the resource, which is really what this is about. Because right now, the system we have kind of is negligent. You know, it kind of just puts people out there, and it's not really good.
Yeah. And, you know, we've had questions before when we've individually talked to people about this, they say, what about RPA? What about, you know, other things? And we're not necessarily replacing RPA. This is something that's either in addition to or along the side of, because, I mean, the fact of the matter is, for anybody that doesn't know, RPA is not a certification program. You're just a registered professional archaeologist. You're on the register. You know, to get into RPA, you need a pulse and a graduate degree, and that's pretty much it. So there's no sort of vetting. There's no sort of, I mean, they don't care what you did your thesis on. I mean, and that I'm not trying to knock RPA for any RPA, you know, board members or anything like that might be listening, but it's not the same thing as what we're trying to do.
Yeah, well, on their website, they have that whole certification programs thing. So
I know, but it doesn't work. Who uses it?
And not only that, but in the end, you know what? If RPA wants to work with us, we want to work with them, to be honest with you. And that's how I'm looking at this the whole way across, is everybody that wants to work with us, let's work, you know? If you just want to, like, you know, complain and, like, section yourself off in a corner, then, like, we're not going to work ahead. But by getting the whole community together, we can push something forward that will be way better than what we have now.
And this is why we're dropping this like we are. You know, we just want to put this out there, get some feedback, get some responses, and see what people think about it. You know, we decided not to approach RPA or SAA or SHA or any of those other people that put out, you know, their little courses or webinars and things like that. We decided just not to approach them because our idea is completely different than anything anybody else has come up with. So we just wanted to throw it out there and then, you know, see where it sticks and then see what they think. But, you know, like Jesse said, we're not opposed to any sort of partnerships that are beneficial to everybody, not just beneficial to people with graduate degrees or beneficial to people with PhDs, but beneficial to people that started CRM yesterday because they just graduated, and people that have been doing this for 40 years. You know, we want it to be beneficial to everyone.
And that's from the top down the whole way, you know, companies Absolutely. Too, what's beneficial to them. So it's reflective across the board.
No, I think at the end of the day, and ultimately when we're talking about beneficial for them, we're talking about beneficial for the science, because that's what this all comes back to, is making good scientists better. You know, that we want to make sure that the science that comes out of the hard work that we're all doing is great. And that's what this really is all about.
Yeah. And you know, also what this leads into is something I've been harping on since day one when I became a field tech, and I didn't know how to use the standing shaker screen. I had no idea. This comes back to quality of life for everybody. And quality of life is not just, you know, I'm getting paid a lot. Quality of life is I'm actually satisfied and happy to go to work every day. You know, maybe you don't actually like the employer you're working for. I'll give you that. But you like the work that you're doing. Okay. And you're confident that, that you know that you're doing it in the best possible way that you can. You've done the research. You've watched our videos. You've said, hey, this is how five people in the industry, you know, have done things. I think I'm going to try this and see how it works. And it's going to work out that way, because everybody hates feeling like crap when they go to work and they're doing something. They're not sure if they're doing it right. You know, they're constantly second guessing themselves. That's a huge quality of life issue. And it causes people to, you know, to really, I mean, feel bad about themselves, let's be honest, and then possibly get out of this field when they feel like crap for an entire project, and then they go 2 or 3 weeks without work, and they're like, well, maybe I'll just get out. Maybe I'll just go work at Starbucks. Maybe I'll just go work at the Gap, you know, and then they never come back.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, there's like a lot of process loss in this field, and that's the thing, is what we need to not do is alienate people. And, you know, one of the worst things we do is like throw people into a situation where it's like wet screen and they don't know what that even means, you know. So that's what we're literally trying to do, is take the curtain away from the wizard and show those techniques so people have a clear understanding.
Yeah, absolutely. So do we have any I'd really like to get some questions from some of the other hosts. Bill, I think you're chiming in.
Well, I was just going to say, it seems like basically while we were talking, I was looking at the RPA and the SAA courses that are on there. And of course, those don't have any certification, but they cover a wide range of topics. And it seems like every single one of them is taught by someone who's been doing this stuff for 20 years and has all the competencies and stuff. Mm-hmm. Whenever I've tried to take the SAA courses, I mean, I guess whenever I've saved up enough money to afford them, because that's the one thing that I always think is kind of crazy, that they're, you know, $100 a piece every single time. And that's if you're a member. But whenever I've tried to afford them, they're sold out. And mm-hmm. so there's not just demand, there's massive demand. These things are sold out like, you know, 20, 30 days in advance. And if you look at the SAA website for these continuing training webinars, they've been going on for a while and they cover a lot of excellent stuff. So it seems like there's demand, but it looks like it's in the form of these webinars and stuff. How do you think that your short courses on kind of, you know, the basics that a lot of people think, well, maybe you could just read an article. I mean, maybe you can read High on the Hog from, you know, 1970 and learn about your cans from that. Or maybe you can read something from the historical archaeology I can't remember which one it was, Approaches to Material Culture. How are you guys going to compete with that when it looks like everybody just wants to learn from a guru?
Well, you know, I can answer that because, you know, our idea on this, and I've taken some of the SAA courses as well. And first off, let me just address the price. It should be free for members, I think. I mean, why not? We're paying a lot of money for the SAA. But anyway, for less than the cost of a single SAA course, you can get level 1, level 2, level 3, level 4 certification, any one of those individual ones. So, I mean, let's just put that out there. But then the other thing is, don't think of this like the SAA. Think of this more like, and I'm going to say a word that might make it so I could never actually work for somebody again if I wanted to, union. Think of us like that, okay? You think of plumbers. No, seriously, though. You think of plumbers. You think of all those other people that have a licensing program. This is kind of a backdoor into that, right? Without going the sort of national government federal route, this is sort of a backdoor to giving people, you know, a voice and a way to come in and tell us, hey, this is what we want, this is what we need, and we're going to give it to them. And you know, so and then that's not that, you know, we're experts in everything like we talked about earlier, but you said people just want to come in and learn from a guru that's been doing this for 20 years. We're going to contact those people. We're just not going to make people sit through a 2-hour course on project management, you can take our 10-episode course on project management and watch them whenever the hell you want to watch them, not when the webinar's on at 2 p.m. on a Wednesday, you know, and pay $100 to do it.
The portability of the course is definitely something that's needed, and then the price is definitely something needed too. But I was trying to say that it seems like the way that everything's set up, you just want to learn from a PhD. People are willing to sign up to learn from a PhD, right? And so they might not see the value in this. Of course, you and I and all of us here all know that identifying a tin can or lithics properly is something that you don't necessarily learn until you do it. However, you can learn a lot by not having to do it. But it seems like we're all interested in learning about creative solutions to the 106 undertakings or whatever, and maybe not looking at the low-hanging fruit.
Mm-hmm. Direct story to this, a guy that works underneath of me has his PhD in anthropology of religion, and, you know, like, really cool guy, I like working with him. But he came up to me, you know, has no experience with a tin can, a beaded ribbed tin can, was like, hey man, is this impaired? You know, so there you go.
Well, and you know, so let me say two things before I go to Doug. He's got a question. Real quick, you don't need to learn from a PhD on how to record a can. Okay, so there's that. But for some of the courses that we do, we would like to have people who are incredibly experienced, and not that you need a PhD to do that, but for some people that are incredibly experienced, for one thing, we've got Bill, who will soon have his PhD. We've got Deanna, who may soon have a PhD as well. So, you know, we will have PhDs, that being said. But also, like I mentioned earlier, we are going to be seeking out regional and subject matter experts. And these people are going to be the ones that are doing the SAA courses. And quite frankly, we may even give them a larger cut than the SAA has given them. It may be more beneficial for them to hit this kind of information. So, you know, that's just...
Well, I mean, as far as like profit sharing, I'd rather just have more courses. I mean, seriously, I'm with you guys on this. That the only reason I even started doing the blogging is because people were asking me how to do things. And then when I'd tell them, they'd just tell more people. And then it was like the next thing you know, there was all these people who were emailing me and asking me, like, you know, how do I find a job? Do you know so-and-so and all this stuff? So I just started writing a blog about it, right? And ebooks.
Yeah.
So this is basically the same idea. You know, how do you recognize all these cans? Once you see those cans, how do you know they matter for the NHPA? Like all that different kind of stuff. They would hire me and have me go out there and help these prehistoric people do these historical artifacts because no one else wanted to learn it. And then they all thought that it was like super complicated. And then, you know, the next thing you know, this opportunity is possible where I can actually just help people realize how they can figure out historical artifacts without having to actually be there with them.
And just really, really quick to reiterate, Bill, is what we're doing is free. Our courses are free. Anybody can take them. If a high school kid wants to take them, they're free. It's the certification that people would be paying for. So if you're getting ready for a project and you want to go out and get brushed up on some stuff, come to PCS. You're going to have some free courses available to you.
Yeah, and if you want to put those certifications on your CV so you can ensure that you'll get the job based on the high-quality job posting you saw in TCS that said exactly what you need, then you can do that too, okay? So we're wrapping this up. Doug, you had a comment that I've been meaning to get back to.
Yeah, I was actually just – I've looked at the SAA, SHA, and I've looked at your guys' first couple of videos, and it actually seems like there's almost no overlap. Aren't you guys basically focusing on a completely different skill set than what they're delivering?
Yes, but then a resounding no, because yes, initially right now we're concentrating a lot of small stuff that they're just simply not covering. But as we develop our levels, you know, for example, level one for field technicians is heavily focused on artifact feature identification and all that stuff you need to know as a boots on the ground archaeologist. But as you move up, you know, we'll insert some leadership courses, maybe some stuff on writing and things like that. And you get into project manager, field director, we'll have courses on proposal writing and report writing and things like that. And as you get up into PI, it'll be more focused around business development and other things like that. Again, we'll need experts in these fields to write these courses because not many of us have had a lot of experience in doing that. So luckily I happen to know somebody who's writing some stuff about the business of archaeology and they might be able to help us out. So anyway, any final questions? We're going to wrap this up in a couple minutes. Anybody?
Oh, well, the only thing I wanted to say is you guys are entering a wide open niche that I don't think is actually going to be filled by the traditional channels anytime soon. However, in order to support the growth, you got to find some kind of way for it to dovetail with what already exists, because universities, the SAA, SHA, these guys have been around for like, you know, decades, hundreds of years, and the credentials and all that stuff. I mean, the college degree is what helps you become a meet the Secretary of the Interior standards, not knowing how to identify cans, not any of that other stuff. So you got to find some kind of a way for it to mix, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Public-private partnership.
Yeah.
And I think what you're getting at is something we've talked about a lot, is that we are looking for partners in this. You know, we are not, like I said earlier, claiming to be the be all and end all. And we're looking for this to be a collaborative thing with the greater archaeological community and greater scientific community.
Exactly. Okay, so we're going to actually call this right now. We'll probably have another PCS-centric episode later on when people have had a chance to digest everything that we've had to say and everything on the website. And as we keep adding new material to the website, I'm sure there will be other conversations, and we'll bring everybody on to discuss this stuff later. So, thanks to the PCS crew, and we're gonna be done with this. Thanks, guys. That's it for another episode of the CRM Archaeology Podcast. Links to some of the items mentioned on the show are in the show notes for this podcast, which can be found at www.archaeologypodcastnetwork.com/CRM Arc Podcast. If you like the show and want to comment, please do. You can leave comments about this or any other episode on the website or on the iTunes page for the episode. You can also email me at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com or use the contact form on the podcast webpage. If you'd like us to answer a question on a future episode, email us. Use the contact form on the website or tweet your questions with the hashtag CRMArcPodcast, or you can tag @ArcPodNet in your tweet. Please share the link to the show wherever you saw it. If you share CRM archaeology-related items on Twitter or Facebook or anywhere else for that matter, be sure to use the hashtag CRMARC so the community can see and comment. If you'd like to subscribe to this podcast, you can do so on iTunes or on Stitcher Radio. You can also type the name of the podcast into your favorite podcasting app and subscribe that way. Don't forget to go over to iTunes and leave a review of the show. It helps us get noticed so more people can find our podcast and benefit from the content. Also, send us show suggestions and interview suggestions. We want this to be a resource for field technicians everywhere, and we want to know what you want to know about. Also, please consider donating to the Archaeology Podcast Network. Your donations help fund our bandwidth and contribute to our editing costs. Thanks to everyone for joining me this week. Thanks also to the listeners for tuning in, and we'll see you in the field. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This show is produced by Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle, and was edited by Chris Webster.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archaeologypodcastnetwork.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.
Thanks again for listening to this episode and for supporting the Archaeology Podcast Network. If you want these shows to keep going, consider becoming a member for just $7.99 US dollars a month. That's cheaper than a venti quad eggnog latte. Go to arcpodnet.com/members for more info.